Live from historic downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania, home of founding father James Wilson, 19th century hymn writer George Duffield, 19th century gospel minister George Norcross, and sports legend Jim Thorpe. It's Iron Sharpens Iron. This is a radio platform in which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17 tells us iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Matthew Henry said that in this passage, we are cautioned to take heed with whom we converse and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better. It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next 2 hours, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. And now here's your host, Chris Arnson.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, Lake City, Florida, and the rest of humanity living on the planet Earth who are listening via live streaming at ironsharpensironradio.com. This is Chris Arnson, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, wishing you all a happy Tuesday on this very first day of August 2023. I'm very intrigued to interview a first-time guest today. His publisher, Bombardier Books, contacted me and asked me if I would like to interview Raymond Ibrahim, who is a translator, an author, a columnist, a widely published expert on the Middle East and Islam, and distinguished senior Shilman Fellow at the Gatestone Institute of the Judith Friedman Rosen, and a fellow at the Middle East Forum. They wanted me to interview Raymond on his new book, Defenders of the West, The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam. And when I saw Victor Davis Hanson's foreword to this book, I was even more intrigued because I have such an extremely high regard for Victor David Hanson from his appearances on Fox News. He is by far one of my very favorite guests that is interviewed fairly regularly on Fox News. And Victor Davis Hanson, who is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, says of this book, "Defenders of the West is engaging storytelling of fascinating people and forgotten events at its best. Reads and flows like an adroitly crafted novel, buttressed by a scholarship that allows those of the past to speak for the past." And it's my honor and privilege to welcome you for the very first time ever to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, Raymond Ibrahim.
Hello, Chris. Thank you very much for having me. I'm very happy to be with you today.
And am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yes, Ibrahim. It's basically an Arabic transliteration of the Hebrew Abraham.
Right.
So, Ibrahim.
And I'm going to give our listeners our email address right away if you'd like to join us on the air with a question for Raymond Ibrahim. Our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Give us your first name at least, your city and state of residence, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. One of the reasons I am interested in conducting this interview today is that I have never done an interview on the Crusades. I have, to my knowledge, rarely has it been mentioned on the program, although we have done a number of programs on Islam. And as everybody who listens to this show regularly knows, that I'm not an ecumenist with Roman Catholics or Eastern Orthodox or those who espouse a different gospel than the one I embrace, the gospel of the Protestant Reformation, which I believe is the biblical gospel. But at the same time, I enjoy interviewing folks that might not see eye to eye with me on occasion on certain areas, even if they're important, if I believe they have something important to say to the body of Christ. And this is one of those issues. It's a very controversial issue that's highly contested and debated even amongst my fellow Reformed Protestant Christians. on whether to look upon the Crusades favorably or negatively, or a combination of both. But I am very fascinated to step into this discussion because I know very little about this period of history. And first of all, Raymond, what is it about your own background, perhaps your religious and or ethnic background, that led you to further investigate the topic of your book and pour such time and effort into getting details correct and finding out more about these issues yourself?
Sure, Chris. The issues that I write about, I've had a very long interest in, and both a sort of personal and professional background in it. And I mean this nexus of study that I focus on, which is really Islam vis-a-vis the West / the Christian world. So my own background personally is my family are what's called Coptic Egyptians, Coptic Orthodox. So they're basically the indigenous inhabitants of Egypt before Islam invaded and conquered it in the year 640. As you know, the Eastern sort of world was Orthodox, so they were part of that, you know, like the Greeks and the Russian. Today they're called Coptic. Coptic is just a word. It means Egyptian, actually. It comes from the Greek word Egyptos, and the Arabs shortened it to Gypt, and that's where we get Copt.
Would that also be a part of what is known as the Oriental Orthodox?
Yes. Yes, I was going to say that, though I eschew that term. I find it kind of strange because Oriental means Eastern, right, and they try to distinguish Eastern Orthodoxy from Oriental Orthodoxy, which both means Eastern. But you're right, Oriental Orthodoxy would be the Coptics, the Armenians, I believe the Assyrians, Ethiopics, whereas Eastern would be more Greeks and Russians and so forth. My family came from Egypt. I was born here in the United States, and they actually did leave the country due to what was at the time not outright persecution, as it is now, actually, in the Middle East, including in Egypt, often, but more discrimination. And so my family came here where I was born. And so I had that sort of personal background. I grew up speaking Arabic, so I'm bilingual, and I also formally studied it in college later on. So I've had an interest, especially in what happens to Christians under Islamic rule in Egypt in particular, but also eventually also the Middle East in general. And then in college, you mentioned Victor Davis Hanson. He was actually my professor for a number of years. And yeah, he was the chair of my thesis, my master's thesis, which was also about actually this nexus, the first military battle between Islam and the Western world, the Battle of Yarmouk in 636, which I wrote well over 20 years ago. So even his, you know, in my academic setting, I mastered in history. I'm sorry. I got a master's degree in history. I majored in history. And like I said, Victor Davis Hanson was my professor for a number of courses. So a lot of classics, you know, Greco-Roman history, medieval history later on, Byzantine, Islamic history, studied various languages, Arabic, can read Koine Greek, a little Latin, Farsi, other Middle Eastern languages. Actually, soon after 9/11, that's when I was writing my thesis with Victor Davis Hanson. And, you know, he recommended I continue my studies because Islam was becoming an important topic again, which I was already focused on. So I applied and went to Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., where I was there for a little bit. And then I got a job at the Library of Congress in the Middle Eastern division, working with all these Arabic books and other languages. And while I was there, this is the origin of how I got into writing. I discovered writings by Al-Qaeda in around 2004, that because the Library of Congress gets all the books from all around the world. And they weren't even cataloged. They were actually in a big yellow tub that I would just peruse through. And I found these writings by Osama bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri that had never been translated. Long story short, it became my first book project, the first book that came out in 2007 called The Al-Qaeda Reader. And it basically demonstrated how Al-Qaeda and all these other radical groups were saying one thing to the West in their communiques. Basically, we're fighting you because you're the aggressor. You support Israel. You're a colonial power. You're racist, whatever. And then what they were writing, what I had found in translators, what they were writing to fellow Muslims, which was the opposite. It was basically, we have to hate and fight them because they're non-Muslims or infidels, Islam requires jihad, et cetera, et cetera. And so that was the nature of that book. At any rate, after that book came out, I exclusively focused on researching and writing. Increasingly at that time about the persecution of Christians under Islam. And then my next book in 2013, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, was dedicated to that, the persecution of Christians, which is a horrific story that's unknown and it's ongoing and getting worse. And perhaps we could talk about it. And then anyway, then I went back to my historical writings. And with my last book, Defenders of the West, I went back to what I was researching when I was at college, Victor Davis Hanson, because as you know, his original claim to fame was basically as a military historian, even though, of course, now he talks about everything and is very influential on everything, it seems. But that's what I was studying. And so now I'm writing more again on that topic, the military history, the historic history between Islam and the West, and in those books. And in the book before it, Sword and Scimitar, 14 Centuries of War Between Islam and the West. And that's another interesting story. We can talk about the U.S. Army War College. They had me talk about it and how organizations.
Do you know that that's 5 minutes from where I'm sitting?
Oh, really? So you're in Pennsylvania by Pittsburgh, was it?
Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Carlisle, yeah, that's right. Okay. So are you familiar with what happened? There was a lot of noise about me in the War College maybe 2-3 years ago. Or was it 3-4 years ago? Yeah.
No,
I can give you the story if you want now. Or
yeah,
later.
Sure. Especially since it's local Carlisle stuff. I know people who are involved in the War College personally. One of whom is a member of my church, where I'm a member.
All right, so you'll probably like this story. The book before the current one, which is called Sword and Scimitar: 14 Centuries of War Between Islam and the West, came out in 2018, and soon thereafter, some folks from the War College contacted me to come give a lecture on it, and I said I agreed, and everything was fine. And, I booked my ticket and hotel and everything because they contacted me maybe 6 months or 4 months before the event. At any rate, like maybe 3-4 days before the event, I learned from the War College that are you familiar with the Council on American Islamic Relations?
Yes.
CARE?
Yes.
Okay. So that group and all sorts of other activists, leftists and so forth protested to the U.S. Army War College for having me on. They said I'm an Islamophobe, I'm a bigot. They called me a white supremacist, despite being Egyptian. So, they threw everything they could at me.
they call Larry Elder a black candidate for president a white supremacist. So.
I know. And they do that so much that these words have lost all meaning.
That's right. So that's right.
They cry wolf too much. Sadly, the War College capitulated to the pressure, and they rescinded my invitation.
Wow.
Yeah. But then I and a lot of people learned about it and they interviewed me, and I appeared on various shows, and a lot of people learned about it. A lot of organizations like the Association of Scholars wrote a letter to Trump, who was in the office at the time, basically saying this is the National Association of Scholars. And petitioned, and long story short, it made a lot of noise, and it made the U.S. Army War College look really bad, because all I was doing was I was invited to give a talk about history.
Right, and you were invited.
And they invited me. I didn't reach out to them.
Right.
And they really put me out, because I had to prepare, and I told you I got tickets, and, it was a little effort and sacrifice on my part, and then they just pulled the rug from underneath me about 2 days before I was supposed to fly out. Anyway, and they apparently got a lot of negative emails and angry parents and so forth. So they actually re-invited me. And I ended up giving the talk. I think it was in February 2020.
Wow.
And CARE, once again, when they learned that I had been re-invited, started their mass campaign and their hysteria, and basically saying things like, if they invite me to talk, I'm gonna incite the military to go and kill more Muslims around the world. And just, real ludicrous stuff. I'm just talking about history, documented history.
Right.
But they went through with it. And if anything, thanks to CARE, they had created so much hubbub about this event that it was actually kind of a sold out event. It was packed. I think they told me it was the second most packed event after a Buzz Aldrin.
Wow. Well, you know, yeah. I'm actually upset right now because I know at least two people from the War College, and I don't remember them telling me about this event at all. And that was 6 years after I moved here to Pennsylvania.
Well, you know, to sort of, you know, help shed light on that, when they invited me over, I mean, it was clear to me they were doing it because they got so much negative press and they just wanted to kind of redeem themselves.
Right.
But they had also told me that they're videotaping it and that they videotape all these lectures. And that was one of the main reasons I wanted to do it, not just for that audience, but to have kind of a record for anyone who wants to see it. And they did videotape it, but they never published it until now. Wow. I remember the last time I spoke to them was maybe their excuse became the famous excuse, COVID, because COVID hit right after. This is February 2020. And so because of COVID, it's been 3 years that they haven't been able to upload the video. So I think in the end, they just wanted to cover their back. But when it comes down to it, they don't want any more controversy by airing this video.
By the way, I don't want to take us on a rabbit trail because I know it's not the focus of our topic today.
Yeah.
But I've always been mystified by progressive Muslims who might even be correctly categorized as liberal Muslims who are not really following the Quran or the Hadith to the letter, are much more progressive in interreligious relations, egalitarianism with women, possibly even homosexuality, etc. It always baffles me when I hear people like that, and even just your average garden variety of non-Muslim leftist, who get so upset about any criticism of authentic Quranic Islam, especially when it comes to the violence associated with it, when folks like them, if they were living in Sharia law, would be the first to either be tortured or executed. So it's baffling to me. Can you explain this? What is why the rush to defend a segment of their religion? Of course, they don't all do this. There are progressive Muslims who do openly and publicly oppose the violence of those involved in Islam and Sharia law and so on. But do you have any explanation as to why these people are rushing to so quickly defend the same segment of Islam that would no doubt have them in very serious life-threatening danger if they were living in their nations?
Well, a lot of these groups, if you mean activist groups, let's say like CARE, whose, you know, entire being is dedicated to, you know, shutting down any criticism and saying it's Islamophobia under the guise of, you know, we want to promote tolerance and we believe in Islam is not violent. Islam is tolerance. We want to just get along and that sort of thing. Excuse me. Those people are actually part of the same problem. They're part of the radical thing. The Islam itself has we can talk about jihad and the doctrines, but it actually has several teachings that encourage Muslims that when they're in a position of weakness, and they can't go all out jihad, they are supposed to do anything possible. They can even outwardly convert to, let's say, Christianity, and they did this. And there's a whole long chapter of that we can talk about, especially in Spain during the Reconquista. And basically, they can abjure Muhammad and curse him and take communion, Catholic Spain at the time, and do everything. But as long as their heart is with Muhammad, and they want to re-subvert Spain, in this example, back to Islam, excuse me, and then they're considered good Muslims. And, the most famous manifestation of these teachings or doctrine is called Taqiyya, which is based, and this is in the Quran. I think Quran 328, if I'm not mistaken, it basically says, do not befriend non-Muslims. And it talks about not befriending Jews and Christians. And then it says, unless you're doing so by way of a precaution. And, there's other verses that talk about
how I've also heard it pronounced Taqiyya. Is that also?
Taqiyya. Yeah. In Arabic, it's Taqiyya.
Okay.
But yeah, it's pronounced in all sorts
because,
of ways.
Because I remember the first time I heard it, a Christian apologist who's an expert on Islam said that Muslims support tequila. And I said, wait a minute, I thought they were against hard liquor. but then I found out what it meant.
Right. But it's the most notorious of many Islamic doctrines that essentially support subversion, support lying, support being two-faced. And so to me, these groups that come up and tell you, no, Islam is not what you think it means. Islam is peace. Bring in more Muslims, let's say, might let them migrate. Where we're, for example, in Europe and Western nations, they're on board with the agenda, and they're just, you know, that's their, the doctrine of jihad. Okay. We know the manifestation of it, the physical one, which is warfare. I'm sure we'll get into that, which happened historically. But jihad, you know, it's funny. A lot of the apologists will tell you jihad does not mean holy war. That's how they translated it. Orientalists did into English. They'll tell you jihad means struggle. And they're absolutely right. Jihad does mean struggle. And therein lies the point. The struggle can take any form. So the most prominent historic form was violence and warfare. But you can struggle on behalf of Islam. And the whole point is to spread Islam and bring the entire world under its rule, Sharia law, Sharia rule, and you can do the struggle anyway. So there's classifications such as jihad al-mal. I won't give you the Arabic. Basically, jihad of money, jihad of the tongue. This is propaganda. Jihad of money is funding and sponsoring and disseminating radical ideas and so forth. There's jihad of the womb, which is the demographic jihad, which means having as many babies as you can, Muslim women and men, so you can outnumber the infidel. So all of these are ongoing by people who will tell you Islam means peace, you have a wrong understanding. So they are, in fact, engaging in jihad. One of the most famous is jihad of the tongue. This is propaganda. That's what CARE does. CARE, to just underscore what I'm saying, was actually busted maybe 15 years ago, and I can send you the official letter, court letter, they're an unindicted conspirator of the largest terrorist funding case in U.S. history. Okay. And yet here they are dictating to the U.S. Army War College who they can listen to and who they can't listen to. So there are those Muslims, of course, who, you know, they actually think Islam means peace and they, you know, they preach these sorts of things, but they're really in the minority, the ones who sincerely believe this. Mm-hmm. The majority are actually part of the larger issue that we're discussing. And to me, they're the more dangerous ones because they're more surreptitious and, you know, basically clandestine. Whereas the ISIS, Islamic State, Al-Qaeda types are in your face. At least you know who they are and what they're all about. Whereas the others are really dedicated to this long program of internal subversion.
Now, one more question off topic before we go to our first commercial break. One of the mysteries to me that is related to my earlier question, or should I even say two of the mysteries to me, are Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, the two first Muslim women sworn into Congress in the United States. One of them, Omar, wears the headdress and so on, giving the appearance of her being a strict Muslim. But what baffles me is that these are leftists. These are people who support feminism and homosexuality. Is this a masquerade, their association with Islam? Would they survive in a nation under Sharia law, even just because they're so vocal and outspoken and are women in the public square? Is that kind of thing tolerated?
It'll all come down to sort of what I was saying, is what they're doing, can it be seen by the strict radical Muslim as benefiting Islam? And I think it can. And so, again, you know, throughout history, Muhammad himself told his followers, you can, you know, you can deny me, you can curse me, you can eat pork, you can do all the things that you're not supposed to do as long as you're doing it to help Islam. All right. So if these women, for example, are, you know, these paying lip service or whatever, or allying with the leftist cause, if that is helpful to Islam, and I think it is, because it's the left that, you know, totally sponsors and supports Islam and Muslims, especially in America and all throughout the world, really, if it is helping, then it is legitimate, and they would actually be congratulated for what they're doing. They would be considered heroic Muslim women, even if they take off their hijab and, you know, I mean, to a limit, obviously, what they can do. And again, even what I'm saying, there's some Muslims will tell you, no, that's not acceptable. But I do know for a fact that there are those, including scholars, and it's something that's manifested throughout history, who would sponsor them and support them and say they're good Muslims, even though they are espousing seemingly leftist views and positions.
But you don't know personally whether these are two charlatans who are intentionally coming by stealth by pretending to be leftists, or if they're just being shills, they're duped into being a benefit to Islam, even though they would never survive physically if they were to hold these positions in Sharia law.
I think a little of both is perfectly understandable. So they come from an Islamic background, especially Omar. You know, she comes from Somalia.
Right.
If you study that nation, if you know anything about it, it is one of the most radical Islamic nations in the world. So, for example, I follow closely the persecution of Christians throughout the world, and most of which happens in the Islamic nations. But the absolute worst Muslim nation, which comes in second in the whole world after North Korea, which has its own issues and it has a base, you know, cults going on there. But the first and absolute worst Muslim nation is Somalia. And if they even know you're a Christian, you're immediately killed.
Wow.
Just on principle. So that's the background and the culture she comes from. I know she knows that. Okay. So obviously she's going to tell you, no, that's not true Islam.
Right.
And she's going to play the nine yards. But I do believe that both of them know what Islam's about. And on the other hand, you know, they're humans, they're women, they live in this society. And so on the one hand, they know that by allying with the left, it's, as long as they're doing it to help Islam, they're okay with Muslims. But at the other hand, I don't know how much of their heart and mind has become infiltrated truly by leftist ideology. So they're sort of trying to, I would think, play a balancing game to make both sides happy.
And the aforementioned Coptics, the most victimized and persecuted group by Muslims, and how does that rank actually with Muslims persecuting other Muslims? Is there far more people who are murdered and persecuted by Muslims who are themselves different kinds of Muslims, or would the Coptics be a higher number of casualties?
Well, you know, to the latter point, Muslims killing and fighting other Muslims on the basis of not being Islamic enough or the wrong right. sort of Islam, Shia versus Sunni, sure, that happens. I don't think it's anywhere near as prevalent as the persecution of Christians throughout okay. the Muslim world.
Okay.
You know, organizations like Open Doors, it's well-known human rights organizations that follows, tracks the persecution of Christians. Its last report, it publishes annual reports, I believe they're called the World Watch List, followed by whichever year, so 2023, it said 360 million Christians are experiencing severe persecution around the world. And then when you look at it, that's where you have the chart. It lists the top 50 nations, and I usually count them out, something like 38 to 40 are Muslim nations, okay? And then when you read about the country profile, so the Copts in Egypt, if they're the most persecuted throughout history, quite possibly, because if you know their history, which I do, and I've studied it, remember Egypt, people don't know this, you know, most people today, if you mention Islam in the Middle East, they just think, and I'll underscore it by saying people ask me and they say, well, you guys are Christians. Why would your parents become Christians in Egypt? Well, they don't realize that the Christians were there first, and Egypt was actually a very Christian nation, more so than Europe, just like Syria was, and it makes sense because that's where Christianity came from, the Middle East. So when Muslims entered it in the 7th century and conquered it, you had the population was Christian. And so today, now it's down to 10%. And if you look at the history, you'll see, you know, a constant uprisings, Muslim riot, Muslim persecution. This sultan's a radical, this one's not. When he's radical, you see Christians being killed, churches burned, and so forth. And that went on so that Egypt went from being almost 100% Christian to being 10%. So until today, the laws against them. And what I'm saying, you know, while I'm happy to talk about the Copts at any length, it's really applicable to Christians all throughout the Islamic world. I think the Christians in Pakistan have it really bad. I think the ones in Nigeria, there's a full-fledged genocide of Christians going on that nobody even knows is happening. You know, we hear all these groups screaming about Black Lives Matter, but in Nigeria and other sub-Saharan nations, let's just stick with Nigeria, something like every month, and I follow this very closely, 300-400 Christians are butchered, massacred, chopped to pieces with machetes for the sole reason that they're Christians. But of course, the media will not mention it. And when it does mention it, it won't even bring religion into it. It'll say, that the persecutors or the murderers are one tribe and the Christians are another tribe. But that's really not what's going on. It's fun. If you read again what they say, the Nigerian Muslims, it's all about religion for them. They're infidels. We have to kill them. We have to take their land. And so you have a full-fledged genocide going on right now. And most people don't even know about it, even though they'll scream and whine and cry about how supposedly Black Lives Matter, but not when they're Christian, apparently, and right, being killed by Muslims. We can get into, you know, why Islam does this to Christians. It's you know, the doctrines and the teachings and the history and so forth. But, yeah, it's not a enviable lot to be a Copt in Egypt or to be a Christian in any Muslim nation by any stretch of the imagination.
All right, we're going to our first commercial break. Again, if you'd like to join us on the air with a question of your own for my guest, and his name is Raymond Ibrahim, and we are discussing his book, Defenders of the West, The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam. Our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Give us your first name, at least, your city and state, and your country of residence. Only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter. Let's say you are in agreement with my guest, but the church where you are a member may be radically opposed to what my guest is saying and defending, and you don't want to identify yourself. You might even be an elder of a church who is in disagreement with his fellow elders over what we're discussing. We understand reasons like that would compel you to remain anonymous, but if it's a general question on history, please give us your first name, at least, your city and state, and your country of residence. We'll be right back with Raymond Ibrahim right after these messages from our sponsors.
The Mid-Atlantic Reformation Society presents The Future of Christendom 2023, The Gospel at War, September 15th to the 16th in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, featuring Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. We are excited to be including a formal debate in this year's conference. Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries will be debating Dr. Gregory Coles, author of Single Gay Christian, A Personal Journey of Faith and Sexual Identity. The debate topic: is gay Christian a biblically acceptable identity for a member of Christ's church? So come join us for the 6th Future of Christendom Conference. The event will take place at Spooky Nook Sports in Mannheim, Pennsylvania, and will run from Friday evening through all day Saturday, with an invitation to the Sunday morning worship service of the Independence Reformed Bible Church. This will be a weekend packed with practical teaching, with a theme of the gospel at war in many areas of our culture, including government schools, the Supreme Court, missions, feminism, and even the church pulpits. Head to futureofchristendom.org.
James White of Alpha Omega Ministries here. I'm very excited to announce that my longtime friend Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio and I are heading down to Atlanta, Georgia again for the G3 National Conference. That's Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd, on a theme that I have been preaching, teaching, writing about, and defending in live public debates for most of my life: the sovereignty of God. I'll be joined on the speaking roster by Steve Lawson, Vodi Balcom, Paul Washer, Virgil Walker, Scott Annual, and Josh Bice, founder of G3 Ministries. And there's more great news. Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio can get you a 30% discount off the registration fee. Go to g3min.org, that's g3min.org, and enter promo code G3ISIR. That's G3ISIR for the 30% discount. Chris Arnzen, I look forward to seeing you all Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd The G3 National Conference in Atlanta, Georgia, on the sovereignty of God. Make sure you stop by the Iron Sharpens Iron radio exhibitor booth and say hi to Chris Arnzen while you're there. Go to g3min.org and enter promo code G3ISIR for your 30% discount off the registration fee.
Brian McLaughlin, president of the SecureCom Group and an enthusiastic supporter of Chris Arnzen's Iron Sharpens Iron radio program. The SecureCom Group provides the highest level of security, closed-circuit television, access control, and communication systems for Manhattan's top residential buildings, as well as churches, commercial properties, municipalities, and more. We custom install exactly what you need to protect yourself, including digital recording, off-site viewing, and connectivity from most smart devices. From simple code-activated systems to the latest technology using facial recognition, the SecureCom Group has it. We also provide the latest in intercom and IP telephone systems. In addition, we provide superior networking platforms. We'll create, maintain, and secure your local network. Whether it's a Wi-Fi or hardwire network, we'll implement the latest secured firewall, endpoint solutions, and cloud backup. I would love to have the honor and privilege of helping protect the lives and property of Iron Sharpens Iron radio listeners and their associates. For more details on how the SecureCom Group may be of service to you with the very latest in security innovations, call 718-353-3355. That's 718-353-3355. Or visit securecomgroup.com. That's securecomgroup.com. This is Brian McLaughlin of the SecureCom Group, joining Chris Arnzen's family of advertisers to keep Iron Sharpens Iron radio on the air.
Puritan Reformed is a Bible-believing, kingdom-building, devil-fighting church. We are devoted to upholding the apostolic doctrine and practice preserved in Scripture alone. Puritan Reformed teaches men to rule and lead as image-bearing prophets, priests, and kings. We teach families to worship together as families. Puritan is committed to teaching the whole counsel of God so that the earth will be filled with the knowledge of God as the waters cover the sea. We sing the Psalms, teach the law, proclaim the gospel, make disciples, maintain discipline, and exalt Christ. This is Pastor David Reese of Puritan Reformed in Phoenix, Arizona. Join us in the glorious cause of advancing Christ's crown and covenant over the kings of the earth. Puritan Reformed Church. Believe, build, fight. PuritanPHX.com.
We here at Iron Sharpens Iron Radio praise God for the generous monthly financial support of Royal Diadem Jewelers, educated by and affiliated with the American Gem Society, Jewelers of America, and the Gemological Institute of America. For the perfect custom-designed engagement ring or any one-of-a-kind piece of jewelry created exactly according to your imagination and specifications, Royal Diadem Jewelers has you covered. No matter where you live in the world, Royal Diadem will walk you step-by-step through every stage of the process and even hold a high-tech internet virtual visit using state-of-the-art jewelry design technology to serve you. They start by listening carefully to determine your needs. They're interested in making what you want, not what they want to sell you. From rough design to digital model, to photorealistic image, to wax prototype model, to the finished product, they're continually listening to your input, likes and dislikes, making any changes necessary along the way. This will ensure that your custom jewelry will turn out exactly as you dreamed and well beyond your expectations. Visit royaldiadem.com. That's royaldiadem.com. royaldiadem.com today. Sterling Vanderwerker, owner of Royal Diadem Jewelers, his wife Bronnie, his business partner and manager Brian Wilson, and the entire family thank you all for listening to, praying for, and supporting the work of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And don't forget, folks, RoyalDiadem.com is still offering Iron Sharpens Iron Radio 100% of the profits from any sale of jewelry to an Iron Sharpens Iron Radio listener, valued at $100 or more, whether it is something that they have in stock in the realm of jewelry, or if you're having a custom-designed piece of jewelry created. They are giving us 100% of the profits simply by you mentioning that you heard about them, RoyalDiadem.com, from Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Please, if you have any interest in purchasing jewelry for yourself or someone you love, go to royaldiadem.com soon and mention Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. We have no idea when they're going to pull the plug on this offer where we get 100% of the profits from any sale of jewelry. So please go to royaldiadem.com soon and mention Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. We're now back with our guest today, Raymond Ibrahim, and the discussion of his book, Defenders of the West, The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam. Our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com. Give us your first name, at least, city and state, and country of residence. I'm going to read one more endorsement for this book, written by a former guest on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, Dario Fernandez Morera, associate professor emeritus at Northwestern University. He writes, "This exciting and very well-researched book introduces us to the lives and heroic deeds of courageous men who, against great odds, defended their people and their culture from an implacable enemy." And I am very intrigued by this subject already, and I would look forward to also hearing from you, the listeners, and we have some listeners already waiting to have their questions asked and answered by my guest, Raymond, but I just wanted to have him answer a few more of my own before we begin reading those questions. First of all, Raymond, what era in history does your book focus upon? Tell us about the span of years that the wars in discussion in this book are considering.
Sure, Chris. Basically, the book starts at the very beginning. So Islam, the global jihad really begins in the year 636, 2 years or 4 years after Muhammad dies in 632. And the Arabian Peninsula has been consolidated under the banner of Islam. And now they have no one else to fight except the so-called infidels. And the surrounding infidels, of course, were Christians at the time, namely the Eastern Roman Empire, what's known as the Byzantine Empire, which was in greater Syria. So the Muslims had consolidated the Arabian Peninsula, and now they started invading into greater Syria, which, of course, was a entirely Christian region. Again, this is where Jerusalem was at the time located, as well as other modern states such as Lebanon and Iraq. And also they attacked at the same time the Persian Empire, the traditional enemy of the Eastern Roman Empire, the Sassanid Empire, which was Zoroastrian, and they conquered them all. So anyway, the book starts from that, and I have to actually speak of the other book before it because they really complement one another, and the way I wrote Defenders of the West is sort of based on what I did in Sword and Scimitar. That's the book that came out in 2018, and the subtitle, it's called Sword and Scimitar, 14 Centuries of War Between Islam and West. So that book really went from the very beginning all the way up until the colonial era. And it goes into detail of the decisive battles. This book, which I refer to as in Sword and Scimitar, I did 8 chapters on 8 decisive battles. In Defenders of the West, I look at what I call 8 decisive men. And the first one is Godfrey du Godfrey. So I talk about the conquest of the Holy Land by the Muslims, and then why the Crusades began. So he's really the first of the defenders, and it goes all the way down to I think the last one is Vlad Tepes, Vlad the Impaler,
where we get Dracula. Right.
right, and he's he dies right around close to 1400, late 14, maybe 14, if I remember, 879, I think, So I call that era, those about 500 years, the high age of Christian resistance to Islamic encroachments, because along with the struggle for the Holy Land, you also had the Reconquista in Spain, where Spain was conquered by Muslims in the 8th century. People forget that, you know, Islam had a presence in Spain for centuries, finally being expelled out as late as the 17th century. And you had, really, those were crusades as well, the Reconquista. It was basically Christians who were holed up in the north of Spain. There was one little area in the northwest that was never conquered, the Asturias, the mountains of the northwest peninsula. And from being, again, a Christian nation, Spain, everyone was holed up in that little left, that little quadrant. And century after century is what you had, the Reconquista, where Christians such as El Cid and, Ferdinand the Great, or I'm sorry, Ferdinand III, also known as Saint Ferdinand. And then the book goes into the Balkans. You had, again, the Ottomans, the Turks, under the same rationale, jihadist rationale, invading Eastern Europe. And you had various, defenders such as John Hunyadi in Hungary, and like we mentioned, Vlad Tepes, Dracula from Romania or Wallachia at the time, and also probably the most famous defender of all, the one that actually was celebrated as a major hero all throughout Europe, is a man few people have ever heard of. He's known as Skanderbeg. His the real name was John Castrioti, Albanian. And he's basically, it's the story of Braveheart. He was defending, you know, the small kingdom, a small tiny region of Albania, with, you know, outnumbered men against this massive Islamic terror group, basically the Ottomans. But not just him. Like I mentioned, it was all Eastern Europe and they were conquered eventually. So that's a long way of talking about, it's basically from 1100 to 1500. Sorry about that.
Oh, so you extend the Crusades all the way to the 16th century. I see
all of these as interrelated. And I think that's what I try to do in these books, to show you these are not distinct phenomena, but they're actually all interrelated. And yes, the Eastern Europeans themselves called their battles with the Ottomans centuries after the Crusades, they called them Crusades, because that's what it was. It was a battle against what they saw as a non-Christian enemy dedicated to destroying and subjugating their land and civilization.
So I guess you are speaking to some extent about the diversion or the distraction of the Roman Catholic Church away from persecuting Protestants was largely because, by necessity, they had wars with Islam to tend with in the earlier part of the 16th century.
Well, not really. The book, like I said, it ends before 1500.
Before 1500. No, okay.
Yeah. Right.
Well, yeah, but what was going on? I've heard in history that there was something that distracted, in regard to Islam, the Church of Rome from their focus on persecuting Protestants. And I can't remember exactly what that was, but perhaps...
Because that's more recent history. I really don't look at that. I'm not holding it back for you. I'm not sure what the distraction was with Islam. But I do know, I mean, we do, even after, so in my other book, Sword and Scimitar, that does go past into the Protestant Reformation, and you still have major battles. So the Battle of Lepanto, and then there's also the Siege of Vienna. That's in 1683. Vienna, the city in Austria, was actually surrounded by 200,000 jihadists. So there was definitely a crusade that the Pope called for. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's what you're referring to, because that was actually a serious and existential crisis for Vienna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole subject of the Crusades, as I said in the very beginning of the program, is a subject that evokes a pretty heated debate amongst even my fellow Protestants, even to be more specific, some who are my fellow Calvinist brethren. And of course, one of the reasons why it's a more difficult issue is that although Protestants were gruesomely persecuted by the Church of Rome, The Crusades took place before the Protestant Reformation. They took place centuries before the Council of Trent, where the Church of Rome officially and dogmatically became, according to a Protestant, an apostate religion because of their anathemas against the Protestant understanding of salvation and other things. So we have to recognize as Protestants that there was a world that existed with professing Christians before the Reformation. And not that I am saying everyone who identified themselves as a Christian was indeed truly regenerate, but at the same time, there were battles and things going on to protect geographically certain areas of the world from being overrun. What was the initial catalyst, I'm assuming, provoked by the Muslims that started these wars within Christendom to begin with?
Yeah, I think you introduced, Chris, a very important topic and one that I'm very interested in, and I'd like to actually, yeah, there's so much to unpack here. First, I'm familiar with, I wouldn't even just call it the Protestant, I'd call it the general Western denunciation or condemnation of the Crusades in general. And I think it's really based on a complete misunderstanding and a distortion of what really happened historically.
Yeah, it's usually said in the very same sentence as the Spanish Inquisition, which is a totally different thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, what were the Crusades and what happened and how did they come about? So as I was mentioning earlier briefly, if you looked at what was the Christian world, you know, this is, of course, 15 centuries before. Or let's go to the dawn of Islam, 7th century, 600s. If you looked at what was then the Christian world, which of course was not Protestant, it was most of Europe, southwest of the Danube and the Rhine, and all of North Africa and Asia Minor or Anatolia, what today we call Turkey, and the Middle East. Okay, so that was the Christian world. It was basically, imagine the Mediterranean and then everything around it, everything north of it, east of it, and south of it. And the older and sort of more developed Christian region, of course, was the East. And it was Alexandria, Antioch, Jerusalem, Constantinople, later on, along with Rome. These were the major centers. This is where the church fathers were and so forth. Now, in the 7th century, Islam came and completely swallowed up three quarters of that. So from the date of Muhammad's death in 632 AD to 732, that century, witnessed the absolute conquest of all of North Africa, Egypt to Morocco. And again, I really have to emphasize, a lot of people misunderstand. They think these regions were always, if not Muslim already, they were somehow pagan or something. No, I mean, the Nicene Creed, which I think everyone professes, was formulated in Egypt by Egyptians at the Council of Nicaea in Asia Minor, and Saint Athanasius, who defended against the Arian heresy, course, was what we would call today a Coptic Christian, an Orthodox.
In fact, could you pick up right where you left off? We have to go into our midway commercial break.
Sure.
And if you have any questions for our guests, please submit them to chrisarnson@gmail.com. You'll have to get in line. There are others waiting before you. And please be patient with us. This is a longer break than normal in the middle of the show. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages with more of Raymond Ibrahim. And our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com. chrisarnson@gmail.com.
The Mid-Atlantic Reformation Society presents The Future of Christendom 2023, The Gospel at War, September 15th to the 16th in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, featuring Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. We are excited to be including a formal debate in this year's conference. Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries will be debating Dr. Gregory Coles, author of Single Gay Christian, A Personal Journey of Faith and Sexual Identity. The debate topic: is gay Christian a biblically acceptable identity for a member of Christ's church? So come join us for the 6th Future of Christendom Conference. The event will take place at Spooky Nook Sports in Mannheim, Pennsylvania, and will run from Friday evening through all day Saturday, with an invitation to the Sunday morning worship service of the Independence Reformed Bible Church. This will be a weekend packed with practical teaching, with a theme of the gospel at war in many areas of our culture, including government schools, the Supreme Court, missions, feminism, and even the church pulpits. Head to futureofchristendom.org.
Dwight of Alpha Mega Ministries here. I'm very excited to announce that my longtime friend Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio and I are heading down to Atlanta, Georgia again for the G3 National Conference. That's Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd, on a theme that I have been preaching, teaching, writing about, and defending in live public debates for most of my life, the sovereignty of God. I'll be joined on the speaking roster by Steve Lawson, Vody Balcom, Paul Washer, Virgil Walker, Scott Annual, and Josh Bice, founder of G3 Ministries. And there's more great news. Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio can get you a 30% discount off the registration fee. Go to g3min.org, that's g3min.org, and enter promo code G3ISIR. That's G3ISIR for the 30% discount. Chris Arnzen, I look forward to seeing you all Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd for the G3 National Conference in Atlanta, Georgia on the sovereignty of God. Make sure you stop by the Iron Sharpens Iron radio exhibitor booth and say hi to Chris Arnzen while you're there. Go to g3min.org and enter promo code G3ISIR for your 30% discount off the registration fee.
If you love Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, one of the best ways you can help keep the show on the air is by supporting our advertisers. One such faithful advertiser who really believes in what Chris Arnzen is doing is Daniel P. Patafuco, serious injury lawyer and Christian apologist. Dan is the president and founder of the Historical Bible Society. Their mission? To foster belief in the credibility of Scripture as the written word of God. They go to various churches, schools, and institutions to publicly display a rare collection of biblical texts, along with a fascinating presentation by Mr. Buttafuoco demonstrating the reliability of Scripture. To advance the cause of the gospel, they created a beautiful, perfect facsimile of the genealogy of Jesus Christ from the original engravings contained in a first edition 1611 King James Bible. This 17th century hand-engraved chart shows the family tree of Jesus Christ going back to Adam and Eve. This book is complete with gorgeous full-size illustrations of Noah's Ark and the Tower of Babel, and an explanation of why the genealogy of Jesus is so important for his claims to the throne of the universe. Originals of this work are in museums, and nobody has ever made it accessible to the public in a large book form before. You can have your own copy of this 44-page genealogy book for a donation of $35 or more. Visit historicalbiblesociety.org. That's historicalbiblesociety.org. Thanks for helping to keep Iron Sharpens Iron Radio on the air.
This is Pastor Bill Sasso, Grace Church at Franklin, here in the beautiful state of Tennessee. Our congregation is one of a growing number of churches who love and support Iron Sharpens Iron Radio financially. Grace Church at Franklin is an independent, autonomous body of believers which strives to clearly declare the whole counsel of God as revealed in Scripture through the person and work of our Lord Jesus Christ. And of course, the end for which we strive is the glory of God. If you live near Franklin, Tennessee, and Franklin is just south of Nashville, maybe 10 minutes, or you are visiting this area, or you have friends and loved ones nearby, we hope you will join us some Lord's Day in worshiping our God and Savior. Please feel free to contact me if you have more questions about Grace Church at Franklin. Our website is gracechurchatfranklin.org. That's gracechurchatfranklin.org. This is Pastor Bill Sasso wishing you all the richest blessings of our sovereign Lord, God, Savior, and King Jesus Christ today and always.
When Iron Sharpens Iron Radio first launched in 2005, the publishers of the New American Standard Bible were among my very first sponsors. It gives me joy knowing that many scholars and pastors in the Iron Sharpens Iron Radio audience have been sticking with or switching to the NASB.
I'm Dr. Joe Moorcraft, pastor of Heritage Presbyterian Church in Cumming, Georgia, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Anthony Uvino, founder of TheReformRookie.com and co-founder of New York Apologetics, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Tim Bushong of Syracuse Baptist Church in Syracuse, Indiana, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Eli Ayala, founder of Revealed Apologetics and staff member with the Historical Bible Society, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Josh Miller of Grace Bible Fellowship Church in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Joe Bianchi, president of Calvary Press Publishing in Greenville, South Carolina, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Jake Korn of Switzerland Community Church in Switzerland, Florida, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
Here's a great way for your church to help keep Iron Sharpens Iron Radio on the air. Pastors, are your pew Bibles tattered and falling apart? Consider restocking your pews with the NASB. And tell the publishers you heard about them from Chris Arnzen on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Go to NASBible.com. That's NASBible.com to place your order.
Hi, this is John Sampson, pastor of King's Church in Peoria, Arizona, taking a moment of your day to talk about Chris Arnzen and the Iron Sharpens Iron podcast. I consider Chris a true friend and a man of high integrity. He's a skilled interviewer who's not afraid to ask the big, penetrating questions while always defending the key doctrines of the Christian faith. I've always been happy to point people to this podcast, knowing it's one of the very few safe places on the internet where folk won't be led astray. I believe this podcast needs to be heard far and wide. This is a day of great spiritual compromise, and yet God has raised Chris up for just such a time. And knowing this, it's up to us as members of the body of Christ to stand with such a ministry in prayer and in finances. I'm pleased to do so and would like to ask you to prayerfully consider joining me in supporting Iron Sharpens Iron financially. Would you consider sending either a one-time gift or even becoming a regular monthly partner with this ministry? I know it would be a huge encouragement to Chris if you would. All the details can be found at ironsharpensironradio.com, where you can click support. That's ironsharpensironradio.com.
Getting a driver's license, running a cash register, flipping burgers, passing sixth grade. Do you know what they all have in common? They all require training, assessments, and certifications. But do you know what requires no training at all? Becoming a parent. My name is A.M. Brewster. I'm the president of Truth, Love, Parent, and host of its award-winning podcast. I've been a biblical family counselor since the early 2000s, and what I've discovered is that the majority of Christian parents have never been biblically equipped to do the work of the ministry in their homes. That's why Truth, Love, Parent exists. We serve God by equipping dads and moms to be the ambassador parents God called and created them to be. We produce free parenting resources, train church leaders, and offer biblical counseling so that the next generation of dads and moms can use the scriptures to parent their children for life and godliness. Please visit us at truthloveparent.com.
It's such a blessing to hear from Iron Sharpens Iron Radio listeners from all over the world. Here's Joe Riley, a listener in Ireland, who wants you to know about a guest on the show he really loves hearing interviewed, Dr. Joe Moorcraft.
I'm Joe Riley, a faithful Iron Sharpens Iron Radio listener here in Athy in County Kildare, Ireland, going back to 2005. One of my very favorite guests on Iron Sharpens Iron is Dr. Joe Moorcraft. If you've been blessed by Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, Dr. Moorcraft and Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming, Georgia, are largely to thank, since they are one of the program's largest financial supporters. Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming is in Forsyth County, a part of the Atlanta metropolitan area. Heritage is a thoroughly biblical church, unwaveringly committed to Westminster standards. And Dr. Joe Moorcraft is the author of an 8-volume commentary on the larger catechism. Heritage is a member of the Hanover Presbytery, built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, and tracing its roots and heritage back to the great Protestant Reformation of the 16th century. Heritage maintains and follows the biblical truth and principles proclaimed by the Reformers: Scripture alone, grace alone, faith alone, Christ alone, and God's glory alone. Their primary goal is the worship of the triune God that continues in eternity. For more details on Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming, Georgia, visit heritagepresbyterianchurch.com. That's heritagepresbyterianchurch.com. Or call 678-954-7831. That's 678-954-7831. If you visit, tell them Joe Riley, an Iron Sharpens Iron radio listener from Atoy in County Kildare, Ireland, sent you.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And don't forget, folks, always make solid-ground-books.com your very first stop for all of your gift-giving needs. And in fact, many of our listeners will be pleased to know that they also carry books that they do not publish themselves, but are published by others, including authors that they highly esteem at Solid Ground Christian Books, like Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. And one of the books that they carry is Dr. White's book, What Every Christian Needs to Know About the Quran. So you might want to look that up at solid-ground-books.com. And they have a multitude of other authors and topics spanning centuries, dating back to the 16th century Protestant Reformation and extending forward to our modern day in the 21st century. So that's solid-ground-books.com. Always mention that you heard about them from Chris Aronson of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Before I return to my guest today, Raymond Ibrahim, we have some very important announcements to make. If you really love the show, folks, you don't want it to disappear from the airwaves, I'm urging you, please go to ironsharpensironradio.com, click support, then click to donate now. You could donate instantly with a debit or credit card in that fashion. If you prefer snail mail, sending a physical check to a physical address from your post office the old-fashioned way, well, there will also be a physical address that appears on your screen when you click support at ironsharpensironradio.com, where you can mail your checks made payable to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. If you want to advertise with us, whether it's your business, whether it is your private practice, like a law firm, like a medical firm, or perhaps it's your church or your parachurch ministry, or just a special event that you want to promote, whatever it is, as long as it's compatible with what I believe, I would love to help you launch an ad campaign as quickly as possible, because we are just as much in urgent need of your advertising dollars as we are in your donations. So please send me an email to chrisaronson@gmail.com and put advertising in the subject line. I also want to remind our listeners, please never cut into the money that you have set aside for your Lord's Day giving to your own local church in order to give to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. In other words, don't give your own church less money than you're accustomed to giving your church in order to bless us financially. Never do that. And also, if you're really struggling to survive and make ends meet, please wait until you're back on your feet and more financially stable before you send us a financial gift. The Bible is very clear that we are commanded to provide for our churches and our families financially. Providing for this radio show is obviously not a command of God. But if you love the show, you have extra money in the bank collecting interest, you have extra money in the bank for benevolent, recreational, and trivial purposes above and beyond the funds that you need to provide for church and family, well, please share some of that money with us if you really want us to continue to exist. Go to ironsharpensironradio.com, click support, then click to donate now. Last but not least, if you are not a member of a biblically faithful, theologically sound, Christ-honoring church, no matter where you live on the planet Earth, I have extensive lists spanning the globe of biblically faithful churches, and I may be able to help you find one near you no matter where on the planet you live, as I have done with many people spanning the globe in the Iron Trip and Zion Radio audience. And I want to remind our listener in Fairfax, Virginia, that I am going to be sending you an email with some church recommendations. I just got that email not long ago. Thank you very much for that request. So just send me an email at chrisarnson@gmail.com and put "I need a church" in the subject line. That's also the email address where you can send in a question to our guest today, Raymond Ibrahim, and that is chrisarnson@gmail.com, chrisarnson@gmail.com. You were right in the middle. I believe you were discussing a major theological controversy in Christendom. It may have been involving Arianism, but I can't remember right now, before I had to interrupt you to go to the break. Do you remember where you left off?
Yeah, no, I think we were going to talk about the Crusades, and I was just given a backdrop, and I was going to talk about it. I think it's important. I'm sure to your audience, specifically when I talk about and I say Christians, there's a lot of pausing and wondering because, some apparently, there were no Christians before 1517. So I think we should kind of, and we need to clear that up before I continue. And I'd like to do that by first saying I'm not here to make any theological argument because that's not my interest. I'm not a Catholic. I'm not here to defend Catholicism. But I do think it's that any Protestant who does not see that there were Christians before 1517 does a disservice to themselves because they create a discontinuity in their understanding of history, and they really don't know how so much of what has happened that brought us here. And and I'm specifically talking about Islam and Islam's impact on the Western world's development. Okay, so in that sense, I was talking about the church fathers, and I was emphasizing that, again, to a lot of people, especially in America, when you say that the Middle East and North Africa, these regions were Christian before Islam, it's people get dumbfounded. They don't buy into that. But yes, they were. And that's, like I said, where the church fathers come from, including Augustine of Hippo, who came from Algeria or Tunisia. And the formulators of the Nicene Creed, many of them who were from Alexandria, Egypt, and so forth. So, I'm not here to say who was a Christian in their heart or who wasn't and that sort of thing. But in the context of the lives of the men that we will be discussing, the men in the book, Defenders of the West, they seem Christian to me. I mean, they were defending their homelands in keeping with just war theory. They were being altruistic, the Crusaders. And so let's get into that. Let's talk about the Crusades. So after three quarters of the Christian world had been conquered and swallowed up by Islam in the 7th century, as I mentioned, from the death of Muhammad, 632, to the Battle of Tours, when Muslims were right in the middle of France in Tours or Poitiers, and they had the big battle with Charles Martel and so forth. And the goal, believe it or not, was to actually conquer all of Europe, which almost happened on several occasions. Again, people aren't aware that Islamic jihadist rage went on deep long after that. In the 16th century, Iceland, Muslim raiders from North Africa reached Iceland and brought back hundreds of slaves. Also, they invaded Denmark. They had an island. I think it's called, I forget its name. I can tell you later, but they had a small island off the coast of England where they launched slave raids into England. So this was a serious thing. And like I mentioned, in 1683, you had Vienna, again, another central or foreign European capital surrounded by jihadists. At any rate, the Crusades. So now we go back in time, 732, three quarters of the Christian world is conquered. Then, right around the turn of the 11th century, or the Turks start pouring into the Middle East, they become Muslim. and they become the new standard bearers of the jihad. And basically, long story short, especially after the Battle of Manzikert in the year 1071, they start taking over Asia Minor. Now, Asia Minor, of course, was another bastion of Christianity. This is where St. Paul wrote many of his epistles to churches in Asia Minor, very old Christian region. That was swallowed up in the jihad, and the accounts just are horrific of what was happening, especially to Armenians, who, of course, are from Eastern Asia Minor, but also the Greeks who were living there, the sort of atrocities the Muslims were committing against them, mass massacres, the burning and destroying of thousands of churches, women and children sexually abused, enslaved by the tens of thousands. Okay, and that is what caused the Eastern Roman Emperor Alexius at the time to call on the Pope in Rome for aid. And so that snowballed in 1095 at the Council of Clermont, where Pope Urban II called for what became known in history as the First Crusade. So it was fundamentally about helping Eastern Christians who were being mauled by Muslims, as well as liberating the, as they call it, the Holy Sepulchre, the church built atop Christ's, the tomb they believed in that in Jerusalem, which was also pilgrims who had been going to that, to Jerusalem from Europe, European pilgrims, were also being attacked and killed and slaughtered and raped by Muslims right before the First Crusade. So that's what the First Crusade was about. And actually a lot of nobles and kings and emperors through the years gave up so much and sacrificed so much of their lands, and most of them died going there. So it was actually understood as an altruistic affair in keeping with just war theory. So this is the only area I'll get into theology. And basically I'm just saying that even just war theory, which I believe transcends all the different denominations, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox,
yep,
was what motivated these men. It was basically, these were Christian lands. They were conquered. You are currently abusing Christians. We are coming to help liberate them. And that's basically what they did. The Crusades, of course, ultimately failed, and they were overwhelmed by Muslim armies about two centuries later. But these wars were fundamentally about, were definitely in keeping with just war theory, because the Muslims were the aggressors. The Muslims had conquered ancient Christian territories, and the Muslims were then persecuting Christians. So that's really the true story of the Crusades. Now, did the Crusaders do what we would call atrocities by today's standards? Of course. But it really, if you compare it to what the Muslims were doing before and during the Crusades, it really pales in significance. And that's the problem. There's so much animosity towards the Crusades that people will highlight and emphasize what happens in the Crusades while completely ignoring and just, you know, what the Muslims did to provoke that sort of response. So that's a little bit on the Crusades, which perhaps you have some questions on.
Yeah, yeah. Before I take some listener questions, I'll just ask one more of my own. As far as the atrocities are concerned that you mentioned, was that an exception to the rule, or was that the rule? Was there a gruesome persecution of Muslim women and children? Was there torture that was unnecessary? All that kind of thing.
Well, no, I mean, again, the best to understand it is whatever the Christians did was often in response to what the Muslims were doing, which was fundamentally worse. So, for example, move a little forward into the Mediterranean right around the 1500s, and you have the Knights Hospitallers, who used to be in Jerusalem, but now they're St. John's Knights, and they're in at Malta. And they were known to actually enslave Muslims, all right? And a lot has been written about that and, you know, how horrible that is. But when you dig into it, as I have, and I show in the book, the Muslims were the ones who were actually enslaving Christians, and this was seen as a response to basically defang them and kind of try to dissuade them from doing that. In fact, I have one historian in mind. I can, if we ever have time, I'll pull up the quote. But he basically says that, that you know, what the Christians were doing was a small percent or a drop in the bucket to what the Muslims were doing in terms of slavery. So in the 16th century, there were 1.25 million Europeans enslaved in the north of Africa, North Africa, Barbary Coast, as it became known. And by the way, most people forget this timeless jihad I'm referring to was of such a quality that the very first nation, the United States of America, found itself in, the very first war, I'm sorry, that the newborn nation of the United States found itself in after independence from Great Britain was with Muslims, acting on the same exact rationale, and I'm referring to the Barbary Wars, when Muslims from the North Africa again started enslaving, this time American sailors, prompting Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. Yeah.
That was where the Marine Corps song came from.
Right.
Halls of Montezuma. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, I'm just trying to show you how multi-tentacled and far-reaching Islam was, that even in America's own history, its earliest history, you have these echoes and wars of jihadist violence.
Okay, we have a listener, Robert, in Westchester County, New York. And Robert says, I am a thoroughgoing Reformed Protestant, and as your host, Chris Arnzen, I am not an ecumenist. But the way that I see what your guest is saying, that this war, or wars plural more accurately, known as the Crusades, were something necessary, just as we view either the Revolutionary War or World War I or World War II, where even though every participant may not have been a truly born-again believer in Christ, at the same time they were being used of God for a necessary quest to make sure that there was freedom for Christians to live and believe as they chose. So I think Robert makes a good point. What do you think about what he said?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement with what he's saying. I think that's ultimately what I'm trying to say. I mean, it seems far-fetched, but believe it or not, if it wasn't for these sorts of fighters and defenders and stalwart crusaders, Europe would likely be a Muslim nation. I mean, it's going to be a Muslim nation anyway now, demographics and whatnot.
Even just through procreation.
Exactly.
Non-Muslims are not breeding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, but it just like 3/4 of the older Christian territory was conquered, it was an aim of Muslims to conquer Europe. And as I said, they went so far, they went into Iceland and all around. There wasn't hardly an area that wasn't raided. And we've seen whole portions of Europe, Spain and Eastern Europe, the Balkans, under Islamic rule. Russia as well. People know the Tatar yoke, the Mongol yoke. That was actually also fits into the Muslim-Christian paradigm, because the Tatars were Muslims and they were enforcing Islamic draconian laws on the Christians of Russia, who would be Orthodox in this case. So it's a really, to me, it's a fascinating history that just isn't as well known. And again, it's not for any theological reasons that I would emphasize it, but just for historical accuracy and an appreciation of what Western civilization and Christians in general went through at the hands of Islam and are still going through. And that's a whole different topic we can eventually sometime touch on.
Yeah, and I understand the Tartars also ate raw steak. Is that true? I don't know if that's where that comes from.
No, that's not.
let's see here. Oh, by the way, Robert, you have won a free copy of this book that we are giving away, this beautiful hardback, very substantially sized book, Defenders of the West, The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam, by our guest Raymond Ibrahim. And please give us your full mailing address in Westchester County, New York, so that cvbbs.com, Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service, can ship that out to you at no cost to you or to us. And we want to thank Bombardier Books for supplying us with a limited number of giveaway copies for our guests who submit questions. We have Joseph in South Central Pennsylvania, who says, I know that your guest started the program by saying he had a background in Coptic Orthodoxy and also later said he is not a Roman Catholic. I wonder if he could care to explain in a little more detail what his current religious positions are so that we can more clearly understand the lenses through which he has studied and written on history.
Right. Well, I think, as I mentioned, my background is Coptic Orthodoxy, and that's the sect, if you will, of Christianity that I formally subscribe to. But when it comes to what lens I wear, I try to wear a very objective lens when I write about history. And this is why I can be neutral or even sometimes favorable towards Catholicism, even though I have nothing to do with Catholics and I'm at variance with much of what they believe as well. So I don't think I bring my own personal religious views into my writing on history.
Well, I'm sure when you said you have nothing to do with Catholics, you'll have them over for a barbecue or something, won't you? I am vehemently opposed to the Roman Catholic gospel of the Council of Trent, but I have Catholic friends. We have, Joseph, you've also won Defenders of the West by my guest, Raymond Ibrahim. And so please make sure we have your full mailing address in South Central PA so that CVBBS.com can ship that out to you. We have BB in Cumberland County, Pennsylvania. And she said, or actually it could be he. I never found out if BB is a he or a she. BB says that earlier Chris Arnes and the host said that there was a stark contrast, if I'm not mistaken, between the Crusades and the Spanish Inquisition. Can you care to expound upon that? Yeah, that's true, because the Spanish Inquisition was not a group of Christians defending geographical territory from an invading army. The Spanish Inquisition, for lack of a better comparison, they were like the Roman Catholic Gestapo, and they were gruesomely torturing and murdering both Jews, Protestants, and Muslims, even when these people were living in peaceful harmony with Roman Catholics, including the Muslims in Spain and so on. So am I correct on that, that this is one of the ways, not only, and also a time reference, that Spanish Inquisition would have been from the 15th century, and believe it or not, all the way until nearly the middle of the 19th century, the Spanish Inquisition was going on, and it reached beyond Spain into the Americas and so on. But give us in your own words how you think it was different.
Yeah, the Inquisition actually in its origin is fundamentally rooted to everything I'm talking about. So it starts in Spain, obviously, because Spain had a massive Muslim presence. Muslims conquered Spain. There were massive wars and what you would call atrocities committed at Christians of Spain, the Catholics, over the centuries. So Spain was conquered in 711, and this goes on. And you have what's called the Reconquista, which is the reconquest. So the Christians start battling, fighting back, and eventually taking the whole of Spain. Now, in 1492, there was only one last bastion of Islam, Granada, in the very southern tip of the Spanish peninsula, even though before the whole of Spain was Islamic. And they permitted Ferdinand and Isabella, this is their time, allowed Granada to maintain its Islamic presence and so forth, and they gave them lots of freedom, but they constantly rebelled and fought back. And so they were given two options, either convert to Christianity or leave and go back to North Africa, which is where the Muslims had come from. And the reason for the conversion wasn't because, you know, they were fanatical Christians and you have to be like us or we hate you. It was because the Spanish crown understood that as long as you maintained an Islamic mentality, you would have that jihadist tribalistic animosity for Christians. So the only way was to become a Christian. So what happened is, the Muslims got a decree from a leading Islamic sheikh, which said you can engage in what's called taqiyya, which is stay a Muslim in your heart, but convert, get baptized, go to church, do the Eucharist, all that. Be a Christian, but in your heart, try to re-subvert Spain back to Islam. And that's what 500,000 Muslims in Granada did. They all converted. And this went on for generations to the point that Christian priests in Spain were complaining, saying these people are better Christians than we are in their punctuality in church and all and maintaining all the Catholic rites. But at home, they would go and preach undying hatred for Christians and work with the Ottomans and Barbary pirates into re-subverting Spain. And that is the origin of the Inquisition. The Christians, in order to decide if you're really a Christian or if you're part of this Takea crowd, which was 500,000, that's where the Inquisition actually began. Now, I'm not talking about all its manifestations down the centuries, but, you know, I think the caller was talking about Muslims and Jews and Christians living in harmony, and that is just, you know, absolutely not the case. And again, these are the lies of history. You dig in the sources like I did, and I documented in my book, you're going to see an exact different story. You're going to see Muslims torturing, terrorizing Christians, burning them at the stake, and so forth. And you see Christians fighting back, and the Inquisition, like I said, it's a culmination of Spain's reconquest and then having this basically fifth column of Muslims were insisting they had converted, but were still actually involved. And whenever they had a chance, there would be massive uprisings. In one case, they sewed all like a priest inside of a pig and barbecued him and went on this kind of mass gang rape of Christian women. So that's the problem. People never hear that side. They just hear what, in this case, the Catholic Church did. And they don't get the full picture of what they were fighting against or what they were up against.
But at the same time, a very crucial distinction here is that the Spanish Inquisition was satanically gruesome towards Jews and Protestants who posed no physical threat to Roman Catholics. So there was not just an exclusively targeting of Muslims. There were...
No, I'm talking about in its origins. This is okay. What it was. Right around, you know, soon after 1492, this is what, now, like I said, how it morphed and spread mm-hmm. and went against non-Muslims, Jews, and Protestants. That's a different story, which I myself am not exactly some expert in, but yeah.
Yeah, well, there were tens of thousands of Jews and mm-hmm. Protestants murdered by the Spanish Inquisition, and it had nothing to do with their threat of overthrowing any kind of Roman Catholic nation or anything like that. BB, thank you so much. You will also receive Defenders of the West by my guest Raymond Ibrahim. And this is compliments of our friends at Bombardier Books, who have donated a limited number of copies of this wonderful book. And CVBBS, Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service, will be shipping it out to you at no cost to you or to us. Let's see here. We have Thomas in West Islip, New York. And Thomas says, how far into our... How far closer to our current day did the Crusades continue? Was this something that was going on during the Protestant Reformation, etc.? Well, actually, you already said earlier that did they not cease before? No, they couldn't have ceased before why don't you answer the question? When did the Crusades cease to occur?
Well, it depends on what one means by a crusade. If you mean the proper historic Holy Land Crusades, which is what most historians mean, and they give them numbers, first, second, third crusades, and so forth, like I said, they start right around 1095, and they end, the usual date is 1291.
Right.
So not even 200 years. But having said that, the fights between Muslims and Christians in Spain and in the Balkans were also seen and validated as bona fide crusades, because it was the same kind of principle, Christians defending their lands, in this case, against the infidel, the heathen, in this case, Muslim invaders. So, yeah, it's kind of a semantic point, I suppose.
Thank you, Thomas. You've also won a copy of the book. Make sure we have your full mailing address. We have Arnie in Perry County, Pennsylvania. And Arnie says, what involvement, if any, did your branch of Christendom have in the Crusades? And I'm speaking of the Coptic Orthodox.
Oh, none. The Coptic Orthodox, the indigenous Orthodox inhabitants of Egypt, were quickly conquered in the year 640. This is about almost four centuries before the First Crusade, and basically swallowed up and subjugated by Muslims. And, you know, just like I was talking about the persecution Christians were going through right before the Crusades, they experienced the same exact thing for centuries up until the Crusades as well. In fact, some of the Crusades were centered in Egypt. And you have some, but there was no serious kind of, you know, cooperation, or the Coptics as a people were basically a cowed and sort of subjugated people who are not a warrior people, and they had been conditioned into that subjugated status for centuries. So when the Crusades started, they were just not really part of anything.
We have Grady, a very loyal and faithful listener to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. and also a very generous supporter of this program, Grady in Asheboro, North Carolina. Greetings, brothers. Were the Muslims united during the Crusades, or as today, were they divided into two groups? I think there are more than two groups, aren't they, that Muslims are divided into? Perhaps you could answer that.
Well, yeah, by two groups, I assume he means the Sunnis and Shias, which is the majority, the main two groups. And then there's some subgroups, mostly under the Shias, but the Sunnis account for 90% of the Muslim population. You had the Sunnis and Shias, but they were constantly fighting each other. In fact, during the Crusades as well, the Fatimids were in Egypt and they were a Shia caliphate versus the Abbasid Sunni caliphate, with Shia echoes itself in Baghdad. At any rate, but when the Crusaders did come, they often did, the Shias and the Sunnis often did ally together against them.
And was this like a recognized ceasefire between the two groups, or were the groups much more conciliatory than they are now?
No, I would say it was more of a ceasefire. It was basically, the enemy of my enemy is my friend,
right?
And the dangerous enemy right now is the Crusader. So
just like we were in World War II with the Soviet Union.
Right.
He has a follow-up question. Was one group fighting the Crusades and one resisting war? I guess since you've already kind of answered that, were any Muslims resisting not the Crusades, but were they resisting their war against Christendom?
No, I know of no instance of any Muslim, Shia or Sunni, who was, if I understand the question, a pacifist or somehow against violence against the invading Crusaders.
All right, Grady, thanks a lot. And you're going to also receive a book in the mail, compliments of Bombardier Press, and also compliments of CVBBS.com. And this is a gift from us and Bombardier Press and CVBBS.com. So there will be no charge for this book. We're going to our final break right now. If you have a question, please submit it to chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Give us your first name, at least your city and state of residence and your country of residence. If you live outside the USA, don't go away. We're going to be right back.
The Mid-Atlantic Reformation Society presents The Future of Christendom 2023, The Gospel at War, September 15th to the 16th in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, featuring Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. We are excited to be including a formal debate in this year's conference. Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries will be debating Dr. Gregory Coles, author of Single Gay Christian, A Personal Journey of Faith and Sexual Identity. The debate topic: is gay Christian a biblically acceptable identity for a member of Christ's church? So come join us for the 6th Future of Christendom Conference. The event will take place at Spooky Nook Sports in Mannheim, Pennsylvania, and will run from Friday evening through all day Saturday, with an invitation to the Sunday morning worship service of the Independence Reformed Bible Church. This will be a weekend packed with practical teaching, with a theme of the gospel at war in many areas of our culture, including government schools, the Supreme Court, missions, feminism, and even the church pulpits. Head to futureofchristendom.org.
I'm Dr. Tony Costa, professor of apologetics and Islam at Toronto Baptist Seminary. I'm thrilled to introduce to you a church where I've been invited to speak and have grown to love, Hope Reformed Baptist Church in Coram, Long Island, New York, pastored by Rich Jensen and Christopher McDowell. It's such a joy to witness and experience fellowship with people of God like the dear saints at Hope Reformed Baptist Church in Coram, who have an intensely passionate desire to continue digging deeper and deeper into the unfathomable riches of Christ in His Holy Word, and to enthusiastically proclaim Christ Jesus the King and His doctrines of sovereign grace in Suffolk County, Long Island, and beyond. I hope you also have the privilege of discovering this precious congregation and receive the blessing of being showered by their love, as I have. For more information on Hope Reformed Baptist Church, go to hopereformedli.net. That's hopereformedli.net. Or call
631-696-5711. That's 631-696-5711. Tell the folks at Hope Reformed Baptist Church of Coram, Long Island, New York, that you heard about them from Tony Costa on Iron Sharpens Iron.
James White of Alpha Mega Ministries here. I'm very excited to announce that my longtime friend Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio and I are heading down to Atlanta, Georgia again for the G3 National Conference. That's Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd, on a theme that I have been preaching, teaching, writing about, and defending in live public debates for most of my life, the sovereignty of God. I'll be joined on the speaking roster by Steve Lawson, Vodi Balcom, Paul Washer, Virgil Walker, Scott Annual, and Josh Bice, founder of G3 Ministries. And there's more great news. Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio can get you a 30% discount off the registration fee. Go to g3min.org, that's g3min.org, and enter promo code G3ISIR. That's G3ISIR for the 30% discount. Chris Arnzen and I look forward to seeing you all Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd for the G3 National Conference in Atlanta, Georgia on the sovereignty of God. Make sure you stop by the Iron Sharpens Iron radio exhibitor booth and say hi to Chris Arnzen while you're there. Go to g3min.org and enter promo code G3ISIR for your 30% discount off the registration fee.
Brian McLaughlin, president of the SecureCom Group and an enthusiastic supporter of Chris Arnzen's Iron Sharpens Iron radio program. The SecureCom Group provides the highest level of security, closed-circuit television, access control, and communication systems for Manhattan's top residential buildings, as well as churches, commercial properties, municipalities, and more. We custom install exactly what you need to protect yourself, including digital recording, off-site viewing, and connectivity from most smart devices. From simple code-activated systems to the latest technology using facial recognition, the SecureCom Group has it. We also provide the latest in intercom and IP telephone systems. In addition, we provide superior networking platforms. We'll create, maintain, and secure your local network. Whether it's a Wi-Fi or hardwire network, we'll implement the latest secured firewall, endpoint solutions, and cloud backup. I would love to have the honor and privilege of helping protect the lives and property of Iron Sharpens Iron radio listeners and their associates. For more details on how the SecureCom Group may be of service to you with the very latest in security innovations, call 718-353-3355. That's 718-353-3355. Or visit securecomgroup.com. That's securecomgroup.com. This is Brian McLaughlin of the SecureCom Group, joining Chris Arnzen's family of advertisers to keep Iron Sharpens Iron radio on the air.
Puritan Reformed is a Bible-believing, kingdom-building, devil-fighting church. We are devoted to upholding the apostolic doctrine and practice preserved in Scripture alone. Puritan Reformed teaches men to rule and lead as image-bearing prophets, priests, and kings. We teach families to worship together as families. Puritan is committed to teaching the whole counsel of God so that the earth will be filled with the knowledge of God as the waters cover the sea. We sing the Psalms, teach the law, proclaim the gospel, make disciples, maintain discipline, and exalt Christ. This is Pastor David Reese of Puritan Reformed in Phoenix, Arizona. Join us in the glorious cause of advancing Christ's crown and covenant over the kings of the earth. Puritan Reformed Church. Believe, build, fight. PuritanPHX.com.
I'm Dr. Joseph Piper, President Emeritus and Professor of Systematic and Applied Theology at Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. Every Christian who's serious about the Reformed faith and the Westminster Standards should have and use the 8-volume commentary on the theology and ethics of the Westminster Larger Catechism titled Authentic Christianity by Dr. Joseph Moorcraft. It is much more than an exposition of the Larger Catechism. It is a thoroughly researched work that utilizes biblical exegesis as well as historical and systematic theology. Dr. Moorcraft is pastor of Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming, Georgia, and I urge everyone looking for a biblically faithful church in that area to visit that fine congregation. For details on the 8-volume commentary, go to westminstercommentary.com, westminstercommentary.com. For details on Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming, Georgia, visit heritagepresbyterianchurch.com, heritagepresbyterianchurch.com. Please tell Dr. Moorcraft and the saints at Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming, Georgia, that Dr. Joseph Piper of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary sent you.
Hello, my name is Anthony Uvinio, and I'm one of the pastors at Hope Reformed Baptist Church in Coram, New York, and also the host of the ReformRookie.com website. I want you to know that if you enjoy listening to the Iron Sharpens Iron radio show like I do, you can now find it on the Apple's iTunes app by typing Iron Sharpens Iron Radio in the search bar. You no longer have to worry about missing a show or a special guest because you're in your car or still at work. Just subscribe on the iTunes app and listen to the Iron Sharpens Iron radio show at any time, day or night. Please be sure to also give it a good review and pass it along to anyone who would benefit from the teaching and the many solidly reformed guests that Chris Arnson has on the show. Truth is so hard to come by these days, so don't waste your time with fluff or fake news. Subscribe to the Iron Sharpens Iron radio podcast right now. And while you're at it, you can also sign up for the ReformRookie.com podcast and visit our website and the YouTube page. We are dedicated to teaching Christian theology from a Reformed Baptist perspective to beginners in the faith as well as seasoned believers. From Keach's Catechism and the Doctrines of Grace to the Olivet Discourse and the Book of Leviticus, the Reformed Rookie podcast and YouTube channel is sure to have something to offer everyone seeking biblical truth. And finally, if you're looking to worship in a Reformed church that holds to the 1689 London Baptist Confession of Faith, please join us at Hope Reformed Baptist Church in Coram, New York. Again, I'm Pastor Anthony Uvinio, and thanks for listening.
When Iron Sharpens Iron Radio first launched in 2005, the publishers of the New American Standard Bible were among my very first sponsors. It gives me joy knowing that many scholars and pastors in the Iron Sharpens Iron Radio audience have been sticking with or switching to the NASB.
This is Daryl Bernard Harrison, co-host of the Just Thinking podcast, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Tom Buck at First Baptist Church of Lindale, Texas, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Kent Keller of Faith Bible Church in Sharpsburg, Georgia, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Andrew Rappaport, the founder and executive director at Striving for Eternity Ministries, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Mark Grimaldi, pastor of Sovereign Grace Church of Greenbrier, Tennessee, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Christopher Cookston, pastor of Prineville Community Church in Prineville, Oregon, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Matt Tarr, pastor of High Point Baptist Church in Larksville, Pennsylvania, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
Here's a great way for your church to help keep Iron Sharpens Iron Radio on the air. Pastors, are your pew Bibles tattered and falling apart? Consider restocking your pews with the NASB. And tell the publishers you heard about them from Chris Arnson on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com to place your order.
Getting a driver's license, running a cash register, flipping burgers, passing sixth grade. Do you know what they all have in common? They all require training, assessments, and certifications. But do you know what requires no training at all? Becoming a parent. My name is A.M. Brewster. I'm the president of Truth, Love, Parent, and host of its award-winning podcast. I've been a biblical family counselor since the early 2000s, and what I've discovered is that the majority of Christian parents have never been biblically equipped to do the work of the ministry in their homes. That's why Truth, Love, Parent exists. We serve God by equipping dads and moms to be the ambassador parents God called and created them to be. We produce free parenting resources, train church leaders, and offer biblical counseling so that the next generation of dads and moms can use the scriptures to parent their children for life and godliness. Please visit us at truthloveparent.com.
Every day at thousands of community centers, high schools, middle schools, juvenile institutions, coffee shops, and local hangouts, Long Island Youth for Christ staff and volunteers meet with young people who need Jesus. We are rural and urban, and we are always about the message of Jesus. Our mission is to have a noticeable spiritual impact on Long Island, New York by engaging young people in the lifelong journey of following Christ. Long Island Youth for Christ has been a stalwart bedrock ministry since 1959. We have a world-class staff and a proven track record of bringing consistent love and encouragement to youths in need all over the country and around the world. Help honor our history by becoming a part of our future. Volunteer, donate, pray, or all of the above. For details, call Long Island Youth for Christ at 631-385-8333. That's 631-385-8333. Or visit liyfc.org. That's liyfc.org.
Welcome back. If you could, Raymond, start highlighting some of the actual specific individuals that you view as heroes of this period of time in history.
Sure, Chris. Basically, the book, it's eight chapters, but you can say it covers three different theaters of war. Three chapters are in the Crusades. Two chapters are the Reconquest or Reconquista in Spain. And three chapters are the Balkans. And so the Crusaders, and this was no easy task. I mean, there were so many characters whose lives were fascinating and who have a really fascinating story to tell through their lens. So I had no dearth of people to pick, but I ended up with the first one is Godfrey from Bouillon, Duke Godfrey, and he was a first crusader. The second one is El Cid, who we know as Charlton Heston.
also known as Ben-Hur, and also known Moses.
Yeah, exactly. He makes it into the book. He's the second. The third one is King Richard Lionheart. The fourth one is Ferdinand III, who goes on to become a saint in the Catholic Church. The fifth one is Louis IX, the heir of France. The sixth is John Hunyadi, Hungarian nobleman who fought the Ottomans. Seventh one would be Skanderbeg. I think I spoke about him a little bit. And his story is amazing when you read it, the Albanian Braveheart. And the last one, of course, is Count Dracula, Vlad the Impaler.
By the way, I don't know if you're familiar with this or aware of this, but there are many people ignorant of history who confuse Vlad the Impaler with John Calvin. There are people.
John who?
John Calvin, the.
Oh, really?
The forefather of what is known as. Yes. I have heard people mix up history and claim that John Calvin's front yard was replete with people, the heads of his victims on stakes and so on. And I said, no, that's not John Calvin. There was only one martyr of the anti-Trinitarian cause that is associated with John Calvin, and that is Miguel Servito, Michael Servetus. And John Calvin did not personally have anything to do with his execution other than submitting to the decision of the Genevan government. But anyway, I don't want to go off on a rabbit trail there. So tell us about Vlad the Impaler. Is he a hero?
Well, okay, so he definitely is in Romania. And again, his story, a lot of what we know about him was actually he became a villain to the King of Hungary right around the time when the Gutenberg press came out. And he's actually, I argue, one of the first victims of fake news, because the Hungarian king had received a lot of money from the papacy, in fact, to help fund a crusade, which Dracula was supposed to spearhead. The Hungarian king never helped Dracula and basically swallowed the money. And so when the time came, he basically accused Vlad, Dracula, of being a traitor and so on and so forth. And he was jailed. And during this time, the printing press, they tried to depict him in order to exonerate the Hungarian king, what he had done, as a monster who had impaled and so forth. Now, he did do all that, but once again, it appears in a vacuum. What most people don't know is he was abducted and held as a hostage in his youth by the Muslims, the Turks, and he learned impaling from them. They were the ones who were really good at it. And then he eventually fled and became the ruler of Wallachia, modern-day Romania. The Muslims, the Turks came after him there, and they entered his land, devastating it. And anyway, he began resorting to impaling people as a sort of terror tactic, tick for tack, to reciprocate and terrorize and frighten the Ottomans, because he was vastly outnumbered. Maybe for each one of his men, there were like 20 Ottomans invading, fully armed. So it was a terror tactic, and he created the Forest of the Impaled. And it actually worked in the story that I narrate based on the sources. Eventually, of course, Romania also was conquered. He was killed. But so, you know, to Romanians, yeah, he's a hero. And by the way, he's not Catholic. He's, I think, the only character in my book who's an Orthodox. But yeah, certainly by our standards, mass atrocities he committed. But we must not see it just in a vacuum and understand that this was a reciprocal, desperate response to what the Muslims were doing to his people.
Now, I know that Bram Stoker based his character Dracula on Vlad the Impaler, but did people actually call Vlad Dracula?
Yeah, Dracula actually was his surname, and it just means the son of the dragon. And but the dragon was his father, because he was a member of the Order of the Dragon, which was an order dedicated to a crusading ideal against the Turks. It was just called the Order of the Dragon. So Dracula was basically almost his moniker. He signed his name as Vlad the Third Dracula, son of the Dragon.
Wow. Yeah. And of course, that doesn't help your reputation with a name like that.
Yeah, that's been blackened.
In a minute, can you summarize what you most want etched in the hearts and minds of our listeners regarding your book?
Basically, that it's an objective retelling or accurate telling of history about something that, and what I get from a lot of Americans, especially Protestants, it's a history we've never kind of encountered, we've never known. And I think it helps fill in the gaps. It's not an apology for Catholicism or anything like that. In fact, I don't get into religion. The only time I get into religion is in the concept of just war theory, and to show that these men were working in that construct. But anyone can decide what they are. But it's more important for me as a historic understanding of where the West came from vis-a-vis Islam and its brutal wars, because I think it helps fill a vacuum in how we understand Islam today. And I would argue that it's because Islam is so misunderstood due to this whitewashing of history that so much of the problems that we're having now in Europe and so forth with migration is a product of that. So I think this book is a contribution in helping to ameliorate that misunderstanding by showing you the continuity of hostility.
Well, I want to thank again Bombardier Books for providing us with the books that we gave away today. If anybody wants more information about this book we've been addressing, Bombardier is an imprint of Post Hill Press. So go to posthillpress.com, posthillpress.com. I want to thank you so much, Raymond, for being such a fascinating guest. I would love to have you back on the program. And I want to thank everybody who listened today to our discussion. And by the way, I want to make sure also that Raymond Ibrahim's website is known to our listeners, RaymondIbrahim.com, and that's spelled I-B-R-A-H-I-M, RaymondEbrahim.com. I want to thank everybody for listening, and I want you all to always remember for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far greater Savior than you are a sinner.